My friends, the great experiment.
Prodigy.
Hit it.
Trick.
Would you look at that?
The greatest trick.
You people, you're all astronauts on some kind of star.
Trick.
The greatest trick.
Welcome to Greatest Trek. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Adam,
I made us late.
It's okay. I made us do half as much work today as we were supposed to. People may notice from my voice sounding strange.
You have done a bit of screaming lately, haven't you?
No, I'm just under the weather, buddy.
Yeah? It's not smoking?
I went to New York for Thanksgiving, and the price I pay is being a little stuffed up today.
Knowing what I know about your love of New York, I feel like that's a price you're enthusiastic about paying. You'd pay it every time.
I'd like to not pay it every time, though. I also got food poisoning on this trip, and like, I would like one of my fucking rare vacations to not be beset by me being super ill one of the days. Like, I feel like like your big birthday trip, it happened.
Yeah, I mean, that was alcohol poisoning, though.
When I went to visit my fucking parents when they lived in France for a year, that it happened. I lost an entire day of that trip. Just happened on this New York trip. It happened on my last New York trip. We had to cut that whole trip short.
Yeah, I remember.
What the fuck?
I thought you might do that this time around. I was hoping you didn't. I'm glad you didn't.
It's fucking bullshit, man. Anyways, you're having a bullshit day, too, from what I understand.
Yeah, it was great. The thing that's been happening with the both of us is waiting for trades. That should be what we call our next show. Just what we do and what we think about when we're waiting for trades. It's a part of this old house that you never see. Like,
right.
What I want to see is like, we're at the New Seasons Project house and we're waiting for the carpenter.
Yeah.
He gave us a window between 9 a.m. and noon, and it's 12:45.
They so casually toss off a, well, now that all the HVAC is past inspection, we're closing the walls up today. And it's like, really? It passed? Like, no problems at all?
Show us the 4 days of inspections.
Show us the back and forth, showing the appeal for an easement
right
on not passing one of the things.
Yeah. So we had a cracked window in our previous home.
Mm-hmm. Like somebody opened it, but not that much.
See, this should be your bad bit moment.
All I do is
bits.
No matter what.
It cracked all the way from east to west, like pane to pane.
Wow.
And we were rightly nervous about this thing eventually like busting completely. This is a 40-year-old window.
Sure.
Or something. Like, who knows what could happen to this thing? So we call a window person, an LA window company that specializes in these replacements.
Okay.
And holy moly. Text is how they prefer to communicate, and text is barely how they communicate, because I felt like I was running the show. Like, So when exactly would you like to come out and replace this? I said, over and over again, after they had taken the money.
Yeah. Wow. Ooh.
So today is the pre-arranged date. The time is between 9 a.m. and 12:30. I'm over there promptly at 9 a.m., which should be a surprise to you and everyone else.
Yeah, how did you do that? How did you... I'm wondering what kind of commitments you do show up for on time. Because it's not work.
How dare you? At the stroke of 12:45, the L.A. window company shows up. Sizes up the situation, gets the glass installed in probably about an hour, and I'm in a different room watching Star Trek Prodigy, and I get called in, hey, we're done, you want to check it out? So I come around the corner, and the window is open,
yeah,
which means there's glass on the left side and screen on the right side.
Sure.
And I walk up to the window, and I put my hand on the screen, and I look at this guy, and I'm like, this isn't glass at all.
All I do is
bits.
No matter what.
How'd that go over?
And I think I deserve points for doing a bit just at the end of this entire process with this glass company. I saw fit to do this.
Yeah.
And let me tell you something, Ben. Not appreciated.
Jesus.
Not appreciated at all. He looked at me and he goes, it's on the left side.
Oh my God.
And I looked at the left side and I was like, all right, cool. Looks good to me. And he's like, yeah, it went great. But then this is a window with like a bunch of shutters on it. You know what I'm talking about? This is probably got an industry name, but like it's got a exterior casement and door shutters that close.
Oh, like storm windows.
He's like, yeah, I got to show you this other thing though. Closes the door shutters and there are like two giant holes in the wall next to where the casement went. And he's like, yeah, I had to take off the casement. And when I did it, like a whole bunch of paint and part of your wall came out with it.
What?
And I look at this thing and I look at him and he had crudely patched it with like not a trowel, Ben. We're patching these two holes with our fingers and a bunch of plaster we mixed in the sink.
We're raw dogging these holes today. We're going trowel free on this old house.
And I look at these holes and I look at this guy and I don't even say anything. And he's like, yeah, you're going to have to go back in there with like some sandpaper and some paint to just kind of finish this off.
Oh, you are you?
And I let that hang in the air. I'm doing the math in my head and I'm like, I don't ever want to see this person again.
Yeah.
I don't want to deal with this company again.
Yeah.
And if the cost of that is sandpaper and paint on my end, then fuck it. Like, I signed his invoice and sent him on his way.
Wow.
As a bit killer, as a wall killer.
I mean,
as a day killer.
He's counting on you making that calculation, though, right?
I think when he saw the bit coming and saw the bit land, he's like, I just got myself out of this wall fix. If I can just bury this guy's bit moment, he will never want me to stay a moment longer than is necessary.
That's so interesting because I was thinking about it like he was so nervous about showing you the holes that he couldn't get out of his head to see the fun of the bit.
I don't think this guy was having any fun, Ben. And neither was I.
Yeah. Wow.
And that was why I was late to the record today.
Another bit bites the dust.
Yeah. Going on a little bit of a streak here of dead bits.
I'm so sorry to hear it. Well, that was a great backstory for the mind state you're in today, Adam. But would you like to get deep into the backstories of a bunch of characters?
Just about all of them, huh?
Yeah, just about. It's season 1, episode 16 of Star Trek Prodigy, Preludes.
You know the greatest danger facing us is an irrational fear of the unknown.
Huge unknown.
Call on Mark. Go fast.
Starts on the shovel ship and Janeway is looking out the captain's bum out window.
Did you see the writer credits, by the way, before we even get to the shovel ship?
Would I be surprised?
To me, what it looks like, this is just like reading between the lines, but I think about a writer's room worth of writers is credited. And I'm wondering if each one of the little vignettes in this got thrown to a different person in the room.
Oh, I mean, tonally, does it feel that way?
A little bit. I mean, like they kind of went with different animation styles in a lot of them and stuff. So,
yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was kind of a neat thing that whizzed by.
We don't get a Janeway actual backstory to start the episode.
Yeah. You'll have to listen to The Greatest Generation for that.
Engage.
Many Starfleet captains relish in a moment to look out a window while a single instrument of some kind plays. In this scene, we get the single piano instrument of Romul heads. Remagerheads? Remagerheads. And the reason we're at Remagerheads is because the protostar is just holding up short outside the neutral zone.
Yeah.
And the protostar isn't responding to hails inside. The shovel ship can't go in.
Whatever trouble they're in, they've locked us out.
This piece, it's beautiful.
Commander David Diggs has come up with a Facebook of the unwanted.
Yeah. Unwanted Facebook, you said? Or I guess to you and me. just Facebook,
you just
right?
call it Facebook, yeah. Like a, it's a redundancy. Yeah, it's kind of ironically a wanted poster for the unwanted.
You know what? Commander Tysis could have shown a little bit of personality by calling it unwanted posters.
Mm, that'd be fun.
But he's too serious. He doesn't seem like a fun commander, does he?
He doesn't seem like a commander who would appreciate a good bit.
There's kind of a rich history of Starfleet commanders that are like, as XOs, part of their duty is to both please that booty, but also be a good hang. And Commander Tysis has not demonstrated the good hang part of the job yet.
He's much more toward the Colonel Kira Chakotay yeah. end of the spectrum than he is toward the Riker end of the spectrum.
You don't think Chakotay's fun?
I'd say that he's funner than Kira.
Yeah.
Kira's the one I want to hang out with the most.
But she's the one you need to earn the hang with the most, though.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
It took a long time to realize how great Kira was as a hang. Seasons,
yeah,
even.
Sure.
To realize that.
Yeah, come to think of it, Spock is kind of a bummer hang. There's yeah. a lot of there's a lot of shitty hangs among triple pips.
Did I say the wrong thing then? Are you proving the opposite?
I'm just like, I agreed with you when you said it. And now that I think about it, I'm like thinking about the long list of commanders and they all kind of have a drag to hang out with.
Riker is such a three pip shooting star that
I know
you almost can't even see the others.
Yeah.
For how bright he shines.
He's really the apex XO. He's yeah. the apexo.
Hmm. Apexo XO. Gossip Commander.
So they start looking at these people and putting faces to names. Over on the Protostar, whole team is working on the repair after they got their proto drive knocked out. I like the little animation with like the puff of smoke in Dal's face. This looked really nice, these shots. I don't know why.
It is a very pretty show as animation goes, and it seems to be getting prettier as time
yeah.
goes on.
Yeah.
There's something that happens in this episode, though, that maybe I've noticed for the first time that's probably been happening from the start, is do you feel like we're getting into an uncanny valley of facial expressions? Like, in the beginning, I felt like this is an animated show, and I'm just noticing that these are animated characters making animated character faces and so forth, but there's something that is growing more lifelike about their expressions, and this is not exclusive to Rock Talk's mouth, which I've believed from the beginning, but like the Rock Talk's mouth effect has been spread to everyone else's faces.
Yeah.
In a way that is kind of horrifying to me and distracting.
Yeah, I mean,
it's too good.
I haven't actually noticed that because I am such a subs not dubs purist that I watch the show in Japanese with English subtitles turned on. So I don't really get a chance to enjoy the facial animation as much as, you know, because I'm reading so much.
You're just a joy. Such a joy. Dahl has taken the bum out baton from Zero and yeah. is running. And it turns the scene into a real bum out measuring contest.
Yeah. What he claims is he's coming to terms with being a failed genetic experiment. And I was like, I was yelling at the TV. He's an ambiguous result of a genetic experiment at worst.
Wouldn't death be the ultimate failure?
Right.
I would think so.
Yeah.
You lived, Dal.
Yeah.
You're flying a starship that doesn't belong to you as its captain.
Yeah, yeah. Things could be a lot worse.
You're not the only one on the ship with a sob story.
Well, who can top that?
The first backstory we get, and you know, like most things that start in prison, that's like one of the first scenes to get out of the way is yeah. Like, what are you in for?
Yeah.
Everybody's innocent in here. Don't you know that?
God, they've waited a long time for this scene.
Yeah, we're in the back quarter of this entire season for the what are you in for scene.
Did you do it? Episode 16.
Yeah. And so Rock Talk's backstory is the first one we get. Rock Talk used to be in sort of a freak show slash sideshow. I mean, if I was Rock Talk, I would have just sold pictures of my mouth to a freak book. Huh? You know?
Are you loving that?
Yeah, you got to sell those mouth pics.
Yeah.
When you got a mouth like that.
Yeah, I mean, and think about all the joy you'd bring into the world being in a freak book.
It's a great coffee table book.
I wanted to know more about this dinner theater. Like, it's very POV of both the hero and Rock Talk, but like, right. Are we eating there? Are we just gambling? Are there like tiers to the reservation?
Everybody's so backlit, you can't see if they've got like turkey legs and other of yeah. the accoutrement of going to a medieval times or whatever.
Is this a chain or yeah. is this just a one-off?
Because it seems to attract a pretty unsavory paying audience, right? Like, it's got the kind of energy of the room full of screaming gamblers that would watch Sylvester Stallone in a blood sport, you know? But, like, it's a kid play fighting with an old man in, like, a Don Quixote outfit.
I wonder which writer it was that basically told the Rancor story from Star Wars. Like, at first. Like, first draft of this origin story is, like, exactly Rancor.
Rancor? What are you doing here?
Everyone's just humoring them.
If you go find out that the Rancor has the mind of like an 8-year-old child and is killed by a falling iron gate, that scene hits so much different.
Someone needs to recut that scene, and when the gate falls, it's Rock Talk's voice.
We love seeing how happy we made the fans.
Could we please just hire the voice actor that plays Rock Talk to do a scripted, like, Luke, come play with me. Ah, I don't want that bone in my mouth.
Fine, you can be the hero, but not like this.
So Rock Talk does not enjoy playing the heel after a certain time. The close-up shot of her mouth, reverse shot on little kitty that is a fan of the show getting yeah. scared away yeah. would be enough to break anyone's heart, and it breaks Rock Talk's heart. And so she has a performance where she breaks kayfabe and like does her own thing and becomes the hero, and the hero turns heel, and it like seems to go over great with the crowd, but then Rock Talk is sold into slavery as punishment.
The setup of the hero character as like a kind old man who's just like doing it for the purity of the artistic performance. I've never seen a character lose stock as quickly as this guy. He is the yeah. worst.
And he's acting all like sad and disappointed and dejected while this deal is going down.
I hate this guy more than the diviner.
He's like your classic right winger who like has this like totally insane victim complex while selling a child into literal slavery.
At least the diviner has a legitimate gripe. This guy had his pride hurt.
Oh man, what a dark story that nobody comments on as such.
Don't feel bad. If it didn't happen, I wouldn't have met you.
I feel like Rock Talk is going to be in her 30s and she's going to be in therapy and start to really unpack what this guy represents to her in her past. And it's going to be like, holy fucking shit! He sold me into slavery!
I thought a lot about the sequence of these stories, right? And why would you start here? Because it would seem as though you can't get any darker than this.
Yeah.
Like, why wouldn't you want this to be the punctuation on the episode, like that coming at the end? But I think, to your credit, I think by making it about selling her into slavery and the awfulness of that, they're obscuring it. Like, by leading with that and then doing stories afterwards, they're just kind of burying it under other stories.
Yeah.
And I think that's the reason that it comes first.
It's, because it is a different episode after this part.
Every story gets a takeaway, like a denouement. Mm-hmm. And that is, this is the realization by everyone else that, like, this is why Rock Duck doesn't like to fight. And also, like, Dirk Diggler's neon sign exploding in Boogie Nights, it helps to talk about it, is a line of dialogue here that I think it's addition by subtraction if you take this line out. I really do. But on the other hand, it's a kid's show, so you kind of have to state the obvious.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
As an adult, I didn't like it, but as a kid, I probably do.
What age kid are you picturing when you say that?
God, that's such a great question, because we just had a story of child slavery.
Yeah. I feel like the more I watch this show, the more I understand it to be pitched not at like 7-year-old as much as like 13 or 14-year-old. Like, is this like the television equivalent of YA?
Not so Nick, but Nick at Night.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I am sure that they think about this a lot in the writer's room, and I'm sure that they think about this a lot at the network level and stuff, but it's not something that I feel like I have a great understanding of. And, you know, having a child, but not one that consumes media yet, I don't quite know where to put this in my mind. I don't know. I'm curious about that.
I don't either. Like, we can only watch it as ourselves.
Right.
Yeah. I have no idea.
Well, we can just stop the show now then, right?
We're not making our podcast for kids. So ours is the opinion that matters.
This is for all those depraved fucking adults that
that get very passionate about kids things.
Yeah, and want to listen to two sweary adults talk about it.
Back in the present, Zero has mechanical leprosy. And this is the moment that the gang decides to press them about their backstory too.
Yeah. And Zero used to do a pretty Starfleety thing, explore strange new worlds, but not talk about it, man.
Yeah, this is sort of a dream, right? Zero starts describing what their life was like, and it's just like, yeah, we go out and explore, and we don't talk about it. We don't have to talk about it.
We went from planet to planet, and we never had one McLaughlin group.
I remember how I used to be so free.
Unfortunately, these Medusans fall into a trap set by the Kazon.
Yeah.
Kazons, who are wearing Oakleys that are so powerful that the Medusans' superpower can't affect them.
Yeah, that must be what those are, some kind of safety glasses, but I had an alternate theory which presupposes that for the same reason the Borg didn't find the Kazon interesting enough to assimilate, the Kazon mind is too simplistic to be shattered by the Medusan effect.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah.
like they're just too crystalline and simplistic to be subject to shattering.
I think you also make a great case for why the Medusans could not empathically detect the Kazon being there in the same place at the same time, right?
Ooh,
like, if
yeah.
They're that dumb. Like, all the Medusans read are like rock material, geological material across the entire planet.
Well, this computer was designed at MIT to detect magma displacements.
And right.
I think when it gets confused, it kind of runs home to what's familiar.
Yeah.
So anyways, these guys are kind of like slavers, and they've lured Zero out into a canyon when the rest of the Medusans are trying to get off the planet in their spaceship, and they eventually grab them with some kind of Klingon pain stick looking thing. This is another, the kid gets sold into slavery though. Mm-hmm. And in this one, it seems like it's Gwyn that's there to like accept the goods, as it were. So a good reminder that Gwyn used to be with the bad guys.
The kid gets sold into slavery is also the original title of the Robert Evans memoir, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, Gwyn apologizes again for this and says, I had no idea. And I wondered what Gwyn meant by that. Like, you had no idea that slavery was bad, or that...
I thought exactly the same thing. Like, in a Holocaust denier kind of way. Like,
yeah.
I had no idea because I did not want to have any idea. I had no curiosity about how it was arranged for you to be delivered to me.
I marched them into the gas chambers, but I didn't close the door or turn the valve.
Back on the shovel ship, the diviner also has a memory problem, just like Gwyn. He can't remember shit, and Essentia and Dreadnought are there kind of working with him to bring him up to speed about what happened on their home planet. Solemn,
yeah,
if you remember, is the name of their home planet, and very specifically who they blame for what happened there.
Starfleet, they saved me.
They destroyed our world.
We get a very different art style for this one. It's kind of illustration-y, but it's like split into different layers, so there's parallax and stuff, but it's a more limited form of animation. And it was also sort of glitched out, like it was being played back on sort of like beat up digital medium of mm-hmm. some kind.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys really come across as assholes in this backstory. Because it's like the Federation came and was like, hey, do you guys want to be in the Federation? And they're like, we're not sure. And then that plunged their society into chaos. And they're like, fuck the Federation for asking if we wanted to be in their club. We will destroy them all.
This is like being invited to a party and you and your partner can't decide whether or not to go. And it ruins your fucking night.
You break up over it, and then you make it your business to destroy the lives of the people that threw that party.
Yeah.
Like, that shit is their fucking fault.
Yep. Yeah.
And then, like, I love that at a certain point in the story, like, the infighting is getting so bad that the Federation is like, all right, guys, deuces. Like, this seems like a bad deal.
The Federation refused to choose a side. Abandoned us to face decades of our own self-annihilation.
And that's the last the Vanukat ever hear of them.
Yeah.
And then Chakotay accidentally falls through a time butthole and shows up like hundreds of years later. And they're like, finally, we have an opportunity for our revenge.
What awful timing. I mean, I guess time buttholes always have awful timing.
Yeah. Oof.
This is just terrible.
Really not a great day for Captain Chakotay.
Mayday, mayday. We're lost somewhere in the Delta Quadrant.
We need to score a lot of land fast.
Licensed businessman.
The diviner starts to remember at a certain point in this, and I feel like that's when, like, the animation gets more realistic, right? We start to get, like, actual footage instead of illustration of.
Yeah, I thought that was a really nice choice they made there to visually draw that distinction.
I did, too. It was subtle. Like, it took my second watch through for me to realize that that's kind of why it was happening.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I liked it. And he starts, you know, filling in some of the information. And so now Essentia and he are kind of explaining the backstory back and forth to each other. And they, you know, take control of the Protostar and they take Chakotay and crew prisoner. And they're going to send the Protostar back in time to destroy the Federation. Chakotay and a Birdman break out of jail, like, at the last moment and send the Protostar back into the time butthole.
Was this a Lower Decks Birdman?
Yeah.
Because he looked pretty jacked.
Yeah. So he did come in the episode, but I don't remember seeing winged turtles take off.
Right.
So I don't know if that's definitive or not.
What do you make of this plan? Like, I love that Chakotay smirks his way into sending the Protostar back.
Yeah.
Part of me did not expect the detail of this backstory to be told right now. Like, this is the story. This is what happened to Chakotay, and it's right here.
Yeah. Is he still in the future then?
Gotta be, right?
Yeah.
I mean, until he turns himself into a Merv and then goes back in time as Merv. Yeah.
That's the only way to safely go back in time.
This plan that the Solemn people hatch is basically zero sum, right? We're going to take every dreadnought we've got and every surviving person of our species and load them one and one into our remaining ships. And we're going to go into this time butthole and hope one of us gets lucky and goes to where the protostar went.
Yeah, because they have a 1% chance of doing it.
Yeah.
And so if you have 100 ships, you have a 100% chance of doing it.
Yeah.
So that's where Ascensia, who is known to her people as the Vindicator, comes from also.
Right.
And she's the same age, but I guess the Diviner came out of the time butthole in an earlier time period and got old and decided to have a progeny and all that.
Right. Yeah, I love how forgiving Ascensia is. Like, who could blame you? You were alone on a child slave planet.
Yeah. Poor guy.
He had to blast.
Breaks my heart thinking about that.
A lot of unintentional comedy to the answer to the question, why did your daughter double cross us? When the Diviner says that she met a boy.
Oh, how deeply you have understood this situation, the Diviner.
Back on the Protostar, all the stories have been told, right?
Yeah.
All the systems are back online. They're ready to charge up the Protocore again. Oh, wait. It's Jenkin Pog's turn, isn't it?
I bet you have an interesting story.
Oh, he has an especially good one.
So we get his flashback, and it turns out he was an orphaned Tuskman, and orphaned Tuskmen are the ones in Tuskman culture who get loaded on ships into cryo chambers and then sent on the deep space missions.
Oh, it's time to play Spam in the Can.
It's an orphan's job.
Yeah, so apparently he comes from pre-Federation Tuskman Prime.
Yeah.
Then. So that's why he... This kind of made me not understand how he didn't remember what species he was.
Exactly.
Feel like there's something tricky there that I don't quite get, but...
Do you feel like he is hundreds of years old for this reason? Is it clear how long the transit was before his pod got opened?
Yeah, it seems like he must be hundreds of years old, and when he gets back to Tuskman Prime, he's going to need to call his law firm because he has accounts that would have matured over all of these years, and...
Yeah.
You know, he's got important affairs to look into, you know?
I really love how Jenkin Pog's flashback answers a question that we never really had. Why Jenkin Pog uses a constant third-person recitation of his name when having interactions is explained in his flashback. Because that's the only goal of this flashback.
Yeah, it's like, why is he slightly nutty
and
talk about himself in the third person?
Yeah.
And the explanation is he's a space orphan in cryostasis at the ship. Rock hits the ship. And then on board the ship, a wrench falls on his cryopod and wakes him up. And somehow that means he's the person who is going to have to deal with the emergency.
I feel like in order to be a spacefaring operation... You must be Six Sigma first, right? What is this tool doing out like this?
Yeah, it's like up above a glass paneled cryo chamber that could easily break and then you'd have a crispy critter.
This is so bad. Yeah. Oh, awful. He fixes everything. He basically has a honey-do list 20 things long, and when he fixes one thing, another thing breaks, and on and on and on, and he's got this robot helper who's giving him all of these tasks that always wants him to introduce himself.
Please state your full name and...
Jenkin Pog can fix it.
Finally, he fixes everything, and then in maybe the most aspirational line of dialogue in all of Star Trek, he is told that now he can rest. And it like choked me up to hear that. God, Jenkin Pog can rest. Good for him.
Yeah.
But the bad news about fixing all of these issues on the ship is that all that pesky breathing he's been doing has used up too much of the air meant for the rest of the pods to have for themselves. Did you understand the scientific basis for this? Like, is there a finite amount of air that cannot be produced. And by breathing the way Jingam Pog has, and by volunteering to leave, is he suggesting that, like, great, if I'm gone, I'm not going to breathe any more air, and you'll get the amount that you need for the rest of the trip?
Yeah, that's what I was understanding. But yeah, like, so he self-sacrifices and then is captured by Kazon and sold into slavery.
It's funny, like, going back to Rock Talk's story as being the most painful expression of a sold into slavery origin story, I'm starting to get unfortunately desensitized to this, right? Because shouldn't every child's story of being sold into slavery or captured for slavery or whatever, that deserves its own single brass instrument.
Right.
And maybe its own episode.
Yeah. The single brass instrument of making a slickback of a child.
Yeah. Yeah. God, I didn't really even consider Jingam Pog being the ultimate slickback. They're all slicks back.
Yeah. They should have called this Star Trek Slickback.
I like it. It's catchy. What's Murph's story, Ben?
It's a belch.
Yeah, it's a burp joke. That's the only backstory. It turns out they reveal that Murph is Chakotay in this scene.
Sounds great.
With the remaining 90 seconds of the episode.
The drive is charged, so they're going to get to do their next proto jump and, you know, get away from the Federation before they make a problem of themselves. And then they're like, hey, but before we jump, what about you, Hologram Janeway? What's your prelude? And Hologram Janeway brings up Molly, the runt of the litter. Is that Janeway's dog?
I only know that from context. I don't feel like Molly is a specific dog that I know about yet at this moment in Star Trek Voyager.
Yeah, I don't either.
Molly, a dog I loved more than Tom Mervyn's himself.
If I could have cropped him out and just shown Molly in that picture frame, I would have. But back on the USS Shovel, they discuss the fact that this wanted poster was posted by the Diviner. The Diviner is the person willing to pay the bounty on all of these kiddos. So Janeway is curious if their finger flexions guest might know anything about this Diviner character. So unescorted, she walks down to Ensign Essentia's room where he's supposed to be, and he judo chops her.
Yeah.
What is this? Oh, what are you doing?
And she hits the deck, and you know she's out because she's got that, like, one eye is like an eighth of an inch open, and then, like, she falls in a way you don't want to fall and have your picture taken. Like, it's not right. A good look, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's an ugly fall.
It's not a hero's fall.
Yeah, it's like your friends put that in the yearbook, in the candid photo section. And then your parents are like, were you drinking?
Yeah, it's the sort of fall that you rarely don't see a penis drawn on a forehead. Like, something just looks off about Janeway on the ground. Something's missing.
Yeah, yeah.
Can't tell. Well. Didn't like the fall, Ben, but did you like the episode?
You know, with the caveat of me being grossed out by all of the kids being sold into slavery of the episode, I thought it was a nice...
You're meant to be grossed out by that, though.
Yeah, no, it's
this
not...
show... Hey, Ben... This show believes slavery is bad.
I know. I'm just saying, you know, like, there are certain subjects that I don't necessarily find that entertaining, this being one of them. But if I can set that aside for a minute, I think that the structure of the episode is really fun and interesting. And it's like a clip show with all new clips and an interesting place in a story arc to put a series of backstory and an interesting place to choose to sort of step out of the forward momentum of the show for a second for that reason. I mean, like, I have some complicated feelings about this one, but I think, like, from a writing and dramatic presentation standpoint, I'm really for it. Do you have similarly complex feelings about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the specific way that I really like this episode was its construction, right?
Yeah.
I love the repetition of a how did you get here type of story. And there's a familiar pattern to it as a TV and movie watcher that just feels like you don't get lost in a story like this.
Yeah.
In a way that is neat and maybe most appropriate for kids. And I... like, one thing we didn't comment on is how fucking flip Zero is about, like, stating for the entire room, oh, you must have a very horrible backstory. Would you like to share it? Like, at what point does consent for Zero's mental abilities present itself? And at what point are those lines actually crossed? Because it seems like Zero crossed the line with every character in that way,
yeah.
In a way that sucked. Like,
Zero's really the Andy Dick of the show. And
the problem that I have with this episode, Ben, even more than slavery, is that these characters don't share because they want to. They share their story because they're goaded into it.
Fuck. Are we turning on this episode?
And I don't like that at all. But yeah, love the episode.
Okay.
No, I mean, the point is complicated feelings.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to sum it up.
Yeah.
Well, Adam, the next thing we do on every episode of Greatest Trek is read the messages in our priority one inbox. What do you say we do that now?
It's the one thing I forgot to do before we started recording. Actually, I forgot many things.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Adam, our first priority one message is from Matt, a guy a little bit embarrassed to be buying another P1 on a Star Trek podcast. And it's to Adam and not Ben.
Hey!
God damn it.
Hey, Ben.
What?
You want to do me a favor and read this one for me?
Fuck you.
I want you to read it.
Hey, Adam, you're overdue for P1 love, so here's a question for you. You mentioned a Seattle Star Trek convention you went to as a teen. I think I was there. Did you see the costume contest? I was the precocious 9-year-old who took second place as a TNG-era Romulan. My bangs cut into a widow's peak.
Whoa!
Thank goodness smartphones hadn't been invented yet.
Well, I really agree with you there, Matt. I don't remember the year that I went, but I can tell you that Marina Sirtis was the guest of honor, and I got an action figure of her signed. I remember that. I could barely speak to her. I was so nervous.
Wow.
What else?
Do you remember kicking the ass of a kid that got second in the costume contest?
This fucking kid with, like, bangs cut into a widow's peak. Well, I shoved him down the escalator. Never saw him again.
Jesus!
He got his bangs caught in the machine.
Got a little walk in there for a second.
Yeah.
Got his bangs caught in the machine.
And now I present to you the signed Marina Sirtis action figure. I don't remember what year it was, Ben, and I...
Pushing people down an escalator is his art form. He's about to paint his masterpiece.
I'm sure this is something that could be easily answered were I to Google it at all. But I did not do the Googling. I don't know what year of the convention I went with a very... very cool girl invited me to go with her to this, and I didn't see that as potentially the message I should have.
Oh, at the time. Dang.
Yeah. As oblivious as ever.
Wow.
That's what I was.
Well, thanks for the message, Matt. That was, I laughed hard enough that I forgive you for only sending that one to Adam.
Ben, our next priority one message is from Mary C., and it is to Ben and Adam.
That's us.
Dear Adam and Ben, I cannot thank you enough for being so awesome. Like many FODs, the pods have helped me through some rough times, and I hope you both know how genuinely appreciated you are. Wishing you only the greatest of treks ahead, Mary C.
Well, thank you, Mary C. That is so absolutely delightful to read.
That changed my whole day, Ben.
That really did.
That was great. Thanks, Mary.
Dang. I'm at a loss for words.
Yeah.
How could I ask someone to send us a P1 after that? Give me a break. Thank you.
You have to, Ben, because Priority One messages are a great way to support the show. You can write something down for us to read at MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where we currently have some openings in future episodes of Greatest Trek and Greatest Generation. So get in there.
Do it. Hey, Adam.
What's up, Ben?
Arnus Franks.
Arnus Franks.
Arnus Franks.
Arnus Franks.
Arnus Franks.
Arnus Franks.
Ah, my waveform is so ugly.
There's no roundness to that waveform. It's spiky and bad.
Yeah, yeah. So, did you have one of those?
I mean... I think the hero of Rock Talk Story, it's almost too ugly to make him a Barnus Franks.
Yeah.
Like, there are so many characters in this episode that overshoot Barnus Franks into like something dark and bad. Like there's totally. something funny and Barnus Franks is not as dark as many of the characters and stories in this episode are. And so it makes it hard to pick one. But I think like the episode specifically makes this hero into a monster. In a way that, like, the Kazon are generally the monsters that pick up everyone else, but very specifically, this hero does Rock Talk dirty. And I have no other place to put the hero other than under the category of Barnus Franks, so I know, it's fucked up. I'm going to do it.
No, I can't disagree with you. That was the Barnus Franks that I wrote down as well, Adam. Yeah. I mean, from the... slapstick, like stepping in the fruit and then slipping on the fruit scene to the not wanting to make eye contact with Rock Talk after getting made to be the heel in their little scene to selling Rock Talk into slavery because of that.
Why do you think the episode doesn't show money changing hands with the hero actually? Like, I thought it was so weird that he made someone else do the transaction.
Yeah. I mean, it also like sort of implies that Rock Talk was his property to sell. So Rock Talk was already enslaved in this context.
I think Rock Talk would never do this. I feel like Jenkum Pog would do this, but Rock Talk would never be like, hey guys, you know, I was the only slave that anyone actually paid for. So that kind of makes me the alpha. Like, I'm worth some platinum.
Yeah, yeah. Apex slave.
What an awful thought.
Yeah, the hero is definitely the Barnus Franks of this episode. We're going to hit you with some credits in a second where you can find out about what's happening on the next episode of Star Trek Prodigy. But first, Adam, we've got a beloved segment here on the show. It's the Warning Bois segment.
Prepare a buoy and launch it when ready.
Warning buoys.
An emergency buoy.
A warning buoy.
Oh, yeah. This is where we read a message posted to social media that should serve as a warning to anyone out there, friend of DeSoto or otherwise, who may be already a viewer or considering being a viewer of the show.
Yeah, yeah. If you see this message, if you're the wrong kind of person for this show, you would turn and go the other direction. But if you're the right kind of person, maybe it's an encouragement to give it a listen. And that's sort of what we're trying to encourage here. More people posting about our show across the interwebs.
Ben, today's Warning Bois message was actually posted to Reddit.
That's kind of a social network.
Reddit. A place I try not to go, but maybe should go more often based on this comment. This was posted by u slash Benjamus1138. Message goes like this. Thank you, Adam, for a massive head wound Harry joke. For a second, I was sitting on my couch with my parents up way past my bedtime and had a whole lot less to worry about. And thanks to you and Ben, too, for all the other dumb shit on the silly pod. You make Mondays bearable and people look at me funny on the bus. Hey, what a sweet thing to say.
Yeah.
By old Benjamus here. I try not to miss an opportunity to refer to a SNL bit from the late 80s or early 90s, or late 90s even.
You've got a great track record at that.
And Massive Head Wound Harry, definitely a funny character from that era.
Indeed, Adam. Well, we've had a great time talking about this weird episode of Star Trek Prodigy. Listen to the credits for more information. And if you'd like to show up in the warning buoys, segment of the show, shut up. You know, tweet about us or...
It was a pronunciation crime.
Do an Instagram post or go on Reddit. You know, all of these things work. Maybe Mastodon. What about TikTok? There's got to be TikToks out there about our show, right? I wonder what happens if you search the greatest Trek hashtag on TikTok.
We haven't always been kind to the social media networks writ large.
Mm-hmm.
But in every place that Friends of DeSoto gather, there are good parts of those places, thanks to them.
It's true.
So seek them out.
Please do.
Greatest Trek is an Uxbridge Shimoda podcast on the Maximum Fun Network. It's hosted by Ben Harrison and Adam Pranica, and it's produced and edited by Wendy Pretty. Next up on Star Trek Prodigy, it's Season 1, Episode 17, Ghost in the Machine. When the crew gets trapped in the holodeck by a mysterious malfunction, they aren't sure what's programmed or what's real. Adam Ragusea created the original music that you hear throughout this show. Make sure you're subscribed to his podcast and his YouTube cooking channel, and you can find those by searching for Adam Ragusea. Thank you to Nick Ditmore, who created the show art, and Bill Tilley, who manages the social media pages on Instagram and Twitter. And as always, a big thank you to the members who are making this show possible with their monthly contributions. You can set up a membership and get access to the network's entire library of bonus content at MaximumFun.org/join. You can also support by leaving a review or just by recommending the show to someone who you think might enjoy it. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week on Greatest Trek.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.